Actually, here's Matt Rothschild, because Maggie is out today, starting the July 4th weekend early, as any sensible person would. I guess I'm not as sensible as Maggie is, because I'm here and happy to be here to guest host for her today, and happy to be with you on this eve of July 4th. There's certainly been a lot going on the last 24 hours, budget-wise, and so we're going to dig into that in this first hour with Robert Craig of Citizen Action, and then in the second hour, we'll be joined by the one and only Jim Santel, one of Maggie's co-hosts, who has his own terrific show, Amicus Law Review, on the Civic Media Radio Network on the weekends. You can join the conversation right now by phone or text by calling 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. I want to hear from you as to what you think about Governor Evers signing the budget in the wee hours of the morning, or what just happened in the Capitol today in Washington, D.C., as Trump was able to ram through, finally, that big, hideous bill. So let's get into it. Robert Craig is the longtime executive director of Citizen Action of Wisconsin, now celebrating its 40th anniversary. Happy anniversary, Robert, and welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show.
Thank you on behalf of all of our leaders over all the decades. And it was great to see you, Matt. You've been in this a long time.
Yeah, as have you. How long have you been with Citizen Action?
I started in 2007. I've been executive director since 2009.
So you know, that's a nice chunk of time.
You get handed these jobs during financial crises. So it was in the middle of the national financial collapse that also created a big crisis for Citizen Action in Wisconsin, as you would imagine.
Yeah, and you lived through that. I never, as an executive director for four decades, there were a couple things I didn't like about that job. One was the constant fundraising. I was a glorified telemarketer by night, and the grant writing, which isn't really writing, it's grant plotting, kind of. And then I also didn't like the HR stuff. I just wanted to write and talk. So now I get to kind of just talk with Civic Media here. I'm supposed to be retired, but I love what Civic Media is doing, so I'm happy to jump in here whenever I can, whenever a host needs a break. So tell me.
Matt, I was going to say, Matt, when you were heading up Progressive Magazine, my Aunt Eloise, now deceased, who lived in Bethesda, Maryland, always gave money to you because you personally called her. There was no other magazine where she heard from the head guy. So I have verification that you were a glorified telemarketer, but my Aunt Eloise really appreciated it.
Oh, that's good to hear. I remember I called not your aunt, but someone else too many times. The only thing she said to me was, "I'm so sick of your pestiferous calls." That word pestiferous kind of stuck in my brain forever. So I guess I didn't call her back again. But yeah, you can't be too proud to beg when you're running a progressive nonprofit, as you know, Robert Craig.
No, absolutely.
Well, let's dig into the Evers signing of the state budget. I want to get your immediate reaction to it.
Actually, there was something unprecedented that went on in Governor Evers's first two terms. This was his fourth budget. And I think people were taken aback when he settled the first budget without much of a fight in 2019 after declaring on badger care expansion that he would fight like hell. I know advocates, legislators, Democrat legislators were all stunned when he, with some line on vetoes, largely signed the Republican budget. This time, there's been a real push on this, both from legislators and from organized groups with real bases of members. Citizen Action Wisconsin, the group I lead, Wisdom, the great faith-based group around the state, Wisconsin Public Education Network, which is a great group of education advocates. We Can, which is the child care workers that really made a big push this election. And WEAC, the very powerful and large teachers union, were pushing the governor to force a fight with the Republicans, bring the public into it by stating what his bottom lines were. And that between that and the fact that we have a very close margin in the state Senate, he had a lot more leverage to get a better budget. In fact, they needed Democratic votes to pass this budget in the state Senate because they lost four Republican votes to this budget. And it's our collective view that he settled because he wanted to settle by the deadline. And it's not really a deadline. The budget can be done late. It's been done many times. that he didn't get as good deal as he could have. And I can go into the details, but not getting Badger Care expansion the last year, we can get the full federal funding, the 95% federal funding. Actually, for schools, even though there was some increase in special ed, having a 0% increase in general aid to public schools, that is, going back, experts at Wisconsin Public Education Network, and I can't find the previous budget that had zero, and with inflation, that's a cut. And this is after 18 years of underfunding. Child care, it's actually reduced from what we had before in the middle of a crisis where the previous child care program was inadequate. So I think those who are pushing the governor to stand and fight are disappointed with his decision and with the small number of Democrats in the Senate and the Assembly that supported this budget.
You mentioned there wasn't a deadline, and yet they hurried it through in the wee hours of the morning, saying that the deadline was the need to get this funding for hospitals that was going to vanish if they didn't sign it before Trump's budget sailed through today. Is that a legitimate reason or is it not?
It's not legitimate. I'll explain how this worked. This relates to the big, ugly bill we can talk about. One of the ways states have funded Medicaid, because, you know, these kind of complexities of funding, disengage voters, is to have taxes on providers of health care that are then used to draw down more federal Medicaid money as the state part of the match, because it's a program that's state and federal funded. So the state puts up money and the federal government more than matches it. And so it's a loophole that they're closing in this new budget. So they want to do this before Trump signed his budget, so they could get the last amount of cut they could get out of this provider tax loophole. Now, the hospitals could have gotten even more money with Badger Care expansion, because we're leaving $1.5 billion of federal money on the table by not doing it. And then they would have been fulfilling their charitable purpose by trying to cover more people, not just increasing their own rates. Also, the state could have just, the Joint Finance Committee governor could have done that as a standalone bill, got that done, and kept going on the budget. There was no reason to ram through an inadequate budget just to appease the hospitals. And there's nothing in there that requires the hospitals to actually lower costs for patients, stay in any communities that they're not in now if they're withdrawing from rural areas and urban cores. And in fact, Mary Filkowski, I don't know if you've dealt with her, the senator from Wausau, very conservative senator, she switched her vote and voted no, and she said that this is just a great giveaway to the hospitals and it won't do anything to reduce the cost of healthcare. And I'm not often agreeing with Senator Filkowski, but she is correct about that. And the governor, when presented with that by media, called it BS, though he didn't abbreviate it, and said that our hospitals are working hard. So he was listening to the hospital association. You didn't need to do this quicker just for that. That could have been done separately in the time frame, and you could have also done Badger Care expansion, funded our schools, child care, shared revenue, other priorities. You know, mass transit, Matt, I don't know if you know this, and headlines, was zeroed out, just like school aid. So it was that's a reduction. Milwaukee mass transit system, MCTS, is in deficit and will have to cut services from people who have, in the north side of Milwaukee, who have nowhere else to get transportation. You can't afford cars and you won't be able to get to work. So there's a lot of reasons not to have settled for this budget.
I know there's a lot of anger on the progressive side. I'm seeing it on Facebook already from some progressive legislators and certainly from activists who wanted a better deal out of the budget or for the governor to threaten to veto the whole thing. Are you surprised at the vehemence on the progressive side here?
No, because that alignment I told you about with the organizing groups that have members across the state and unions, and AFT Wisconsin also was part of this coalition in addition to WEAC. We were also working with allies on the inside, so there was unprecedented communication. So we knew we had a shared position. We had all the rumors from legislators as to what was going on in the secret negotiations. And when the governor and then yesterday were completely coordinated. So a lot of the voices you're seeing in the media from progressive legislators that are critiquing this were in direct communication the whole time and still are with groups like Citizen Action, WEAC, Wisconsin Publication Education Network, Wisdom, the Child Care Advocates.
I mean, it is kind of shocking to me that there was no funding other than for special education for K through 12, given that Evers was school superintendent and, you know, acted like the education secretary, knows the education issue, had a tremendous amount of pressure from the grassroots at these hearings on the budget. Everyone showed up saying, we need more money, K through 12. What was in his mind there? Do you think that he didn't, you know, he made child care a bottom line. He didn't make public education a bottom line.
You know, it's hard to get into the soul of elected leaders, right? So it's sort of, and you do that, you know, historians, they try to guess, but they're not sure. They give hypotheses, right? He has been a disappointment in the year of the child and given his background on education. It's been his brand not to smooth out the edges, to be bipartisan Tony, Uncle Tony kind of image, right? Very approachable, wears well. And this brand seems to, that the political brand seems to, in my opinion, getting in the way of what, why you become governor. That is for the policy, not for the successful politics. So he's the only in the Marquette polling. He's not super popular, but he's the only statewide official above water, so to speak, more popular than unpopular. And is thinking about a third term. So this does seem to work as politics because people are, you know, get concerned about all of the factional infighting, et cetera, as they see it. But in a polarized electorate, there's really, I mean, and political system with a lot of gerrymandering and safe districts, there's no other way to get things like make healthcare affordable, fund your schools adequately. So I think it's partly what the political advice he's getting and the want to be politically successful. Whether this is also a conflict aversion where he just doesn't like to have a knockdown drag out, that could be, but I don't want to go too far and try to be the amateur psychologist.
It may be a temperamental issue, though. You might be onto something there. I'm speaking with Robert Craig, who's the executive director over at Citizen Action. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show. I'm Matt Rothschild, and we'll be right back. I want to hear what you think about the governor signing this budget. 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. We'll be right back.